When you need expert help and advice on issues affecting your business, NFU Cymru, we're here for you.
Farmers Guardian is proud to work alongside the Rock and Roll Farming Podcast. For all the latest news and features from across the ag industry, head to fginsight.com. You'll also find a wide variety of advice pieces to help you and your farming business flourish.
Want to get to know the people who produce the food that you eat? This is the place. Step this way and welcome to Rock and Roll Farming. Hey everybody, and welcome to Rock and Roll Farming episode 116. I'm your host Will Evans, and tonight I'm heading all the way across the Atlantic Ocean to Carmen, Idaho, USA, to talk to cattle rancher Cheyenne Smith. Cheyenne, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm really, really good, and I can't begin to tell you how excited I am to be speaking to you after following you on social media for so long, and I'm not the only one who's excited, because when I mentioned it on Twitter that I was interviewing you, it absolutely blew up on there, as you know.
Oh, good.
So, tell us about the part of Idaho where you live. It's in the northwest of the US, isn't it?
Yeah, we're in the northwest, and then we're kind of, I guess, considered central Idaho, because Idaho is such a long state and goes all the way up to Canada. So We're not close to Canada, but we're right under Montana.
Yeah. Okay. So it's quite high altitude there, isn't it?
It is. It is. Well, and low. We just got back from Lewiston, which is sea level, I think. It's low.
Okay.
So that depends on where in the state you are.
Yeah, okay. So what are the mountain ranges that we see in so many of your pictures? Because they're pretty close to you, aren't they?
Yeah, we're actually surrounded on all four sides with mountains. And I asked my husband what some of them are, because we call them by their range names because they're part of our range pastures that we graze on in the summer. And he goes, you know, I honestly don't know. We've always called them the specific thing. So to the east of us, I Googled it, and it says they're called the Salmon River Mountain Ranges. But then the ones that everybody loves from my pictures with the high peaks, Those are part of the Beaverhead Bitterroots. And that the tops of those peaks are actually the Montana-Idaho border.
Okay. And that's the Salmon River that runs past there too.
It
as well.
Is.
Okay.
Yes.
Agriculture wise, is cattle ranching the main enterprise in that part of the US?
Yes. I'd say, I guess I can't speak for all the states, but for the Northwest states, I'd say that cattle ranching is big. And I can say for Idaho that animal agriculture as a whole is the number one economical contributor, closely followed by plant-based agriculture in general is what our economy is based on in Idaho. As far as like our little county here in Idaho, I can't remember the stat, but we have a lot more cows than people. We're very heavy to cattle.
Yeah. Okay. And are you from that part of the world? Are you from Idaho, or are you from somewhere
I'm
else?
Originally from Montana, so close.
Okay. But not from an agricultural background, which really surprised me.
No, not specifically. And I know we've done family searches, and I have farms and ranches throughout my family history, but not my parents and none of my grandparents. I guess my dad grew up kind of on a ranch on the reservation.
Yeah.
But they didn't stay there. But I grew up in the country, and I've had horses my whole life. So that honestly was the pull to ranching, is I got to have horses again.
Yeah. So you grew up sort of helping your dad with construction, right?
Yeah. My dad has a, construction business, and he builds custom homes, for as many years as I can remember now. They're all log homes, but he'll build anything custom. And later on I went to start my own decorative concrete business, and gave that up to move to Idaho.
Okay, so what caused you to move to Idaho?
I met my husband
in a bar.
Yeah, unfortunately. I came down for a 4th of July to celebrate with some friends, and we stopped off at a bar on the way from 4th of July fairground celebrations, tractor pulls, to meet a couple more people before we went to their ranch for fireworks, and that was one of the people that they invited to meet us there.
Brilliant. So Jay's from a ranching family, though, going way back.
Yes. Yeah. He's fourth generation on Carmen Creek and has a lot more generations. I think there's two more generations back in Idaho, and then they all go back, looking it up from Ireland and Scotland and all over the place. So he's very heavy to agriculture, but his parents his mom didn't inherit a ranch. Mm-hmm. And so both of his parents are actually teachers. So he didn't grow up on a ranch either, though he did grow up helping on all of his cousins and aunts and uncles' places. So it's a tough way to say it. He's one generation removed, I suppose.
Yeah.
From the ranch.
Yeah. Okay. So how did the two of you get your opportunity in ranching?
We kind of about the same way. We stumbled into it about the same way we stumbled into each other. he had about 20 cows and was leasing 50 acres and owned 5 acres when I met him. And we were going to lose the ranch that he was leasing, the little place. It was an older gentleman, and he just was never happy with anybody longer than 3 years. And Jay had been there for 5, so I guess he had outdone his time anyway. And we were just looking for some place to put our cows, and we were going to have to sell them. And we found a guy that needed his place. He needed the hay cut. He scared off everybody. He was kind of he's kind of a scary, crabby guy with a lot of social problems. But anyway, we ended up doing the hay, and he just fell in love with my husband. He just knew that this was the person that had to buy his place, and his place had been for sale for a long time. And it took a lot of long conversations and craziness, but we got it bought. And so we bought the ranch together, and we'll be in debt probably until we're 80, but it's ours.
Yeah. So opportunities like that, hard for young people to come by over there.
The opportunity is there, but the financial strain of it is high. I mean, you either have to know somebody that will do you a favor, and we didn't know this guy, but the favor he did for us is he carried the note at an interest rate that we could afford, because we couldn't afford what he wanted for it with the bank interest on top of it.
Yeah.
So he got his asking price. We got an interest rate that made the payment the same for us either way. So unless you can find somebody and lease their ranch or work into a management position, buying land is an expensive proposition, and it takes a lot of dedication to managing your finances if you're going to do it. It's not impossible, but it's not fun or easy.
Yeah, sure. Okay. So how did the J Lazy S brand come about? Is that something you designed together when you started out?
No. Jay had searched for a year. You have to apply here for your brand. You can't, you can make one up and it can be whatever.
Yeah.
But then you have to apply through the state to make sure nobody else has it.
Okay.
And he sent in probably 20 or 30 different things with his initials on it. And they'd all been taken, and they actually sent this one back. What about the J Lazy S? He's like, oh, well, that's perfect. He'd never thought of it. So that was the brand.
Cool. Okay. So you're ranchers. What's the technical difference between a ranch and a farm, or is that one quite difficult to define?
I think it's not difficult to define as so much as that there's people that hang their hat on the definition or on being one or the other. I think, to me, farming is growing crops and selling that crop.
Uh-huh.
Because we farm a crop, we farm hay, but we don't sell it. We just grow it for our cows. I don't, when it started years and years and years ago, these people went off with the crazy idea that they would just graze cattle. Mm-hmm. And they didn't keep them in one place, and they just moved their cattle herds. And there's a whole history of the Free Grazing Act, and that's probably the wrong name, but there's and it's almost every Western movie that has to do with cows has to do with free grazers or people putting up fences and all those different things. So somebody at some point threw their hat on having one type of animal and not having a diversified operation where you have more than one income. And to me, that's the difference. I mean, I wouldn't call somebody that raises chicken a chicken rancher, so I'm not sure why they're chicken farmers or hog farmers and not hog ranchers. Yeah. I don't know why cattle get to be special, but they are. So,
okay. So, all these fast forward, all these years later from where you started, you now have a family, got children. Bringing your kids up on a ranch with the lifestyle you have and the environment in which you live and work, how important is that to you?
You know, I didn't realize how important it would be until we have them. And I can't imagine having to raise them in another way. Yeah. And I just, we just feel overall just so fortunate that they get to be here and to have this connection to the animals and the outdoors and not have to depend on technology to feed their imagination. We limit it, of course, anyway, because it's so addictive, but for them to be able to do that and to be this, I hope they enjoy it. I grew up on job sites with my dad out in the middle of the country, playing with sticks and picking up nails. And so I look back at it fondly, and having that freedom to run around in the country and pretend to be a horse or get lost or ditch my brother on a rock. I mean, that I'm hoping that they can look back fondly at of those types of memories.
Yeah, similar story here. So still now in 2019, what feels like a rapidly changing world, the sort of Western ranching culture still resonates with people, not just in the US, but across the globe. Why do you think that is? What is it that people identify with?
I think it's our epic style. I mean, when people see pictures and stuff, that's the first thing that catches their eye is the cowboy or the boots. And so I think we must just be super stylish.
Are you conscious of the heritage aspect of it all?
We try to be. We try to hold on to as much of it and to use as much of it as we can while still not, you know, still applying as much technology where we can. Yeah. But I mean, that's why we still ride horses. There's ranchers that gather and move cows with helicopters and drones. And I might be more time effective, but what's the fun of being time? Where's the fun in that?
Yeah. Okay. So tell me about the cattle. I'm going to guess from the name of the ranch they're Angus.
Yeah. Yeah. We raise Angus. Jay had a passion as a child for Angus. His family, two generation back, actually raised Herefords, and then everything switched to Angus. But he started out young with a passion. His dad has two of his best friends from high school that both have registered Angus ranches here in the valley, and they took Jay under their wings and really just got him excited about the registered part of it and the bloodlines and what you can do with that to improve your herd. So we have a registered herd and a commercial herd because we started out commercial because we had to buy all of our cows and all of our land and all of our equipment. So you start out where you can. Sure. So our cows were commercial and our equipment's all used. But his passion is with what you can do with genetics. Mm-hmm. And so we've just started switching our herd over. I'd say it's 2/3, 1/3 now. It used to be half and half a couple years ago, but now we're even more heavy, being 2/3 registered to 1/3 commercial. And we've been invited to sell our bulls at one of the bigger registered sales here in the valley. And that was a big step up too.
Yeah, that must be a good feeling.
It's really humbling to me. I've watched my husband struggle to put all this together, and of course he'd been told his whole life that just to give it up because there's no way, because like we talked about with the opportunities, that it's just so hard that it's not worth it. And he's stubborn and I'm stubborn. And, so it's been really neat to watch people recognize his dedication and to give us opportunities. One of them being right away to lease a neighboring ranch and take over their commercial herd for them. And, handpicked Jay over his own kids to do it. And so that was a huge and humbling thing. And then again, to be invited to be a part of this Angus sale, it was also very humbling. And not only to be a part of it, but they've asked Jay to be the person in charge of making the sale go, not of their ranch or anything, but Jay spurs and makes sure that all the events for the sale happen and go off the way they're supposed to. So that was, again, another huge opportunity that we were handed.
Definitely. So tell me about the range system. I guess they range from spring right through to the early winter months, right?
Yeah, we can go out usually the first week of May. We haven't gone out yet. We're waiting for the grass to pop a little bit better. Uh-huh. And then they start coming home anywhere from August, depending on the range, until October. And then we have a range that we'd go out with dry cows, and they come home about the middle of November. So yeah, basically late spring to early winter.
It's pretty good. And how does it work? Because a lot of it's public land, is that right?
It's all public land, depending on whether it's Forest Service or Bureau of Land Management, which are both federal lands. And then we also have state land that we lease as well. So we pay per head per month to use it.
Is that quite a straightforward system? Is that quite a standard system? Has it always been that way?
Once they got rid of free grazing, I'm pretty sure it's been every year we get a pile more regulations placed on top of us because people have a misconception of what we're doing out there. But yeah. And the grazing fees get steeper and steeper every year. But it's pretty straightforward. We pay to use it. And then on top of paying to use it, we personally take care of it. We maintain trails. We take out diseased trees. We fix troughs. And all those things benefit more than just our cows. They benefit the wildlife, and they benefit the other users of the public lands, hikers, bike riders, campers, all benefit from us being out there and taking care of the resource.
Yeah. I mean, I was laughing there because farmers listening in the UK will know that we have regulations coming out of our ears at the moment. But yeah, it's quite interesting to hear you say that. But what size of an area do they range? I mean, how long would it take you to typically round them up?
Our biggest range is 60,000 acres, and our smallest range is 6,000 acres. And so on the small range, I can usually go out in a day and find everything.
Yeah.
But the big one, the 60,000 one, because it's on the big mountain range to the east, we have to count on our cows being ready to come home, basically, to find them all. And if they don't, then we go out and we check water holes and we check sweet spots. And then even then, a couple of years ago, we couldn't find a bull, and we were hiring people to fly and employing all sorts of different methods. We went out on snowmobiles, and one year we just didn't find him. We thought for sure the wolf ate him, and I found him the next spring because he found the cows. So I don't know how he quite did that, but he's much happier here this past winter. Every time we drive by him, we're like, aren't you glad you came home this year?
That's a tough bull.
Yeah. But I guess when we go round up in the fall, we go out with three or four other ranches that also share the range with us, and we go out for 3 weeks and gather stuff to meadows and put them in hot wire fences before, and then we'll do a big push home. But for the most part, my cows, when the weather changes, start to head home.
Yeah. Okay. So what about the horses that you use? Do you breed your own?
Yeah, we have. And we're starting to again. I'm sure you've seen the pictures of my babies. my husband's family has raised Morgans for years, and I really fell in love with the breed. I'd never been around them before. But I came with a old quarter horse that I'd gotten as a child, and my horse that I ride all the time, Lark, is half quarter horse, half Morgan, and I've decided I want more of those. I really like those. So that's what we're doing now. So we do raise and train our own horses.
Okay, what is it you like about those?
Well, quarter horses are supposed to be cowy. They're supposed to be good ranch horses. Mm-hmm. But in the mountains, all the terrain and the mount, I mean, we spend 12 hours in the saddle some days more. And so the slower the horse, the more you feel. And Morgans have a gated walk. It's called an extended walk. So they walk really smooth and really fast. And they're kind of like mountain goats in the mountain. They just have tremendous footing. And they're very similar to Arabs in that they can go and go and go. They have no quit. They're super athletic and have big hearts and just, they can go 12 hours and they're not tired at all.
Yeah. 12 hours in a saddle is a long time.
It is. It's a long day. Yeah.
Oh, but so how long would it take to train to be a fully fledged working horse?
We put them under saddle for the first 30 days when they're three. Mm-hmm. And then usually by the time they're six, you have a solid animal under you. The Sparrow that I've been riding, she's five this year. Last year, we took us a year longer. She got broke at four. So last year, I did a lot of just range riding, and this year we're doing a lot more ranch work, and she's come along really nicely. And by next year, we'll know exactly what type of horse she is, and she'll be basically a finished product, but they keep learning and keep growing. And then we usually ride them until they're 17 or 18 and then try to sell them to somebody that just wants a nice horse.
Yeah.
So that we can move on to keeping our younger ones going.
Yeah. And your kids, your girls, I guess they were virtually born in the saddle.
Yeah. Yeah. I got kicked out of the saddle with both of them about 7 months. I was told, nope, that's it. But they've been riding with me since they were tiny. Especially if I had a good horse. But both of them, we have pictures when they're tiny babies, and they've been riding the whole time. And they're both good riders, I'd say. We've gotten them horses that are nice and made sure that they're safe, but I think they're good riders, and they can put 12 hours in the saddle and complain only minimally.
Jeez. Okay, so one of the best things about following you on social media, which we'll talk more about shortly, but it's the pictures you post to the actual working side of the ranch. I think the branding, castrating, roping cattle, the real day-to-day work that goes on. Is that your favorite part of it all? And do you enjoy showing people that's how it all works?
I do. And really that's kind of how I got roped into the whole thing anyway, I was just taking pictures of what we were doing and sharing with family, because I really enjoy that part of our life. And I like looking back at what we were doing. Mm-hmm. And I suppose it's no different than people taking pictures of their vacations and it's exciting, and it's so beautiful where we live. So the pictures always turn out really nice.
Yeah. Well, when you show pictures of things like branding or castrating, do you ever get people questioning that?
I used to a lot, and I used to deal with a lot of, I will call them fanatical people. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of gone away. And I think it might be because I just stopped.
Yeah.
If I just stopped interacting with the people that weren't there to have a conversation. Mm-hmm. I'm not afraid to talk to people, but I'm not going to waste any more of my time arguing with people that aren't there. They're not asking questions because they want an answer. They're asking a question so that they can answer it with whatever viewpoint they already have. And I'm more than happy to have a conversation with anybody, even with people that don't agree with what I'm doing, as long as it's a conversation.
You'd get the vast majority, though, would be very positive, would they?
I feel that they are. And even if they're not happy about the branding or the castrating. They understand the reason for it.
Yeah.
And the branding, I mean, it's not something that we can choose to do or not to do. It's mm-hmm. required. Mm-hmm. And the castrating is, to me, it's not a big deal. Mm. But I also get the squeamish side of it. I feel more than I should for a lot of people and for animals. And it's not an easy thing to watch if you're mm-hmm. and squeamish is the wrong word. But if you have a soft heart, and I do, so I get it. I get it when people look at things and think, oh, that looks horrible. Mm-hmm. Because until you've been around it and you don't get hard to it, you just understand that it's horrible to you because you're a person and you feel things a certain way. It's not so horrible to the animal. They really don't care about pain. They care about being scared.
Yeah.
And so if you can stay calm and keep them calm, then they're good. They're content. So, and showing people that really helps once they understand, and then they can relate it to almost anything. Like, you see people hit a deer with a car, and if you hit a person with a car, the person's not getting up. Mm-hmm. Deer bounce up and run away. For some reason, they can deal with that kind of stuff in a way that we just can't.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Okay. So how did you initially get started with social media?
Well, like everybody, probably just wanting to connect with people that I hadn't seen in a long time, making sure that my parents and my grandparents or whoever could see pictures of our family growing up. And then, like I said, what we were doing caught so many people's attention, and I wasn't sharing it. There was I made everything private because I didn't want my kids being subject to whatever internet predator was maybe out there, because I'm one of those moms that worries about those kind of things. but a lot of people said that I should share it. And so I started with Facebook and just made an account for a ranch. And then we're part of a cattle association for the state, for the county, the state, and for the whole United States, where it's three different things, but they're all the same thing. But anyway, they host workshops, like you guys go to conferences or whatever, and they mm-hmm. have workshops. And we were told that we should do more. And so somebody said I should try Twitter, and it was scary, but I tried it. And honestly, the not starting with friends seemed to be bigger somehow. My Twitter account took off, and I have people from everywhere, and my Facebook account is still really small and mostly, you know, well, I guess not half and half anymore, but most of the people that follow me on Facebook are friends and family anyway.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the difference is or why one works better than the other, but I think it's a good way to share what we do, and I'm happy that I do it. It's kind of like a part-time job sometimes, though.
Yeah, I know what you mean. So why do you think it's important that we tell our stories as farmers and ranchers? Or do you think it's important, or are you just doing your thing?
Well, the age-old thing, you don't tell your story as well. And you never realize that more than you have something that you're passionate about that somebody's screaming stuff about it that's just not true. And you don't understand why people believe the not true.
Yeah.
But won't even look at the true. And so for me, it started with the fact that there's so many people that don't agree with having cows on range. And I, being new to it, I didn't get it. I didn't understand how there could be any negative association to having cows eating grass on a mountain. It made no sense to me. And then you start looking at the groups that are avidly against it and why they're against it and what people are told and how easily they believe it. So it just became important to me to fight for something that I didn't want to see go away. We lose range rights and we lose active ranges all the time over lawsuits. And there's just huge portions of the mountain that aren't grazed anymore because of all of these things. And I would hope that my grandkids can still, if they choose to ranch, take cows out to range like their great, great, great grandmother did when she was a child. It's a heritage thing, but it's also, it's good for the environment and it's good for the cows.
Yeah.
So telling my story became a passion on its own, and the way we live, and I'm sure you know this too, you don't get to just go meet people. It's not like being in school anymore where you make new friends. And so it's an active way to meet people, even though, like you said, you don't ever really speak to them, or, and sometimes you don't ever get to meet them, but you're making friends and you're making connections. Yeah. Maybe not the best way to do it, but it's being social in a way that's available to us right now. Yeah. And so it makes you feel not so closed off and not so stuck in one place all the time if you can interact with people this way. So it's nice that way too.
I definitely agree. So what about the photography aspect of it? Now I know from Google stalking that you've got an art degree background. Does that help at all? Because you are, I don't want to blow smoke at you, but you are a phenomenal picture taker, photographer, picture taker, photographer. You take some stunning pictures.
Thank you. No, my art degree background is for visual communications and advertising.
Okay.
Which I loathe, by the way, Okay. I knew 3/4 of the way through my degree that this was not a job that I was ever interested in. Honestly, my photography, and I take the majority of my pictures with my phone because I keep breaking cameras and it's become an expense that we don't want to deal with.
Yeah.
And it's just easier all the way around to take it with the phone because then I can load it right onto social media. I don't have to move chips or anything. It's just where we live. I mean, I guess from years of art, whether it was commercial art or not, I know how much sky to get in and how to play with the colors a little bit to make things pop. But honest to God, it's just where we live. It is just so beautiful here that anybody can come and take a picture and it's just breathtaking. It's just where we are.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that because sometimes that you're conscious of how breathtaking the scenery is, because sometimes when you live in a place, you've lived there all your life, you sort of become very used to it, and then when people visit, they're blown away and you kind of stand and think, oh yeah, it is pretty stunning here, but you're obviously very conscious of it every day.
I am, and I don't know if it's because I've only been here, I think this is year 15, but it just I guess I've always loved mountains and I've always loved trees, but yeah, I never get tired of it. And Jay's and his mom have been here their whole life, and huge picture windows so we can see the mountains whenever we sit for coffee or whatever, so that they've never gotten tired of it either. It just is something we really appreciate, at least.
Okay. So following on from your own Twitter account, a couple of years ago you started the Ag of the World Twitter account as well, and that's been really successful, hasn't it, in bringing people together, as you say, from all around the world, really.
Yeah, it's been fantastic. I can't believe how well it's done and how well it's been warmly received, because I kind of feel like, well, I don't even kind of feel, I ripped it off, the whole idea, after getting to host Farms of the World. I thought it was such a just completely fantastic idea, but I wanted to be able to include more than just farmers, because agriculture is, it's so much more than just the start of where your food comes from. And it's not been as easy to find all the different jobs, because a lot of those people aren't on Twitter or aren't telling their part of the story. But I wanted to be able to include that anyway. And it's fun. You get to meet new people, and I kind of feel like I help people, and that is really rewarding to me, to be able to connect people to their type of people here.
Yeah, definitely. And sometimes with those kind of accounts, I've noticed that once they get going on there and they maybe have a good week and they get a really good response, it really helps them to kick on with their own social media stories as well, doesn't it? Yeah.
And it just connects more people, and that's what we're supposed to be doing anyway. So I try to help any small account or new account, not small account, new account, to be able to do that. And I mean, if people want to host that account. I've never told anybody no. I don't have any reason to tell somebody no, but it's definitely a way to connect to more people and to boost your message and to find more people that want to hear what you have to say. So it's a wonderful platform.
Definitely. So with such a lot going on there, are you able to ever get away from the ranch for a few days, or do you not want to?
We do, and we always want to, and then we get somewhere else, and then we want to go home. This post is good, too. But we try to take the kids on at least one, and we've been hitting two camping trips a year, and they're usually not too far from home, but there's so much countryside here that even Jay's only seen once in his life, so there's lots of places to go to camp and to do different stuff, and then we try to go out of state at least every other year if we can afford it and save for it. Like this last December, we went down to Arizona for a couple of days, and that was a lot of fun and relaxing.
Yeah.
So we do try to travel a bit.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean by wanting to go away and then wanting to come home. We're very similar to that. I mean, I guess for us over here, it's quite you mentioned there's parts of this that you've only ever seen once, and it's hard for us to comprehend the size of the US. I mean, I'm going to guess that the UK is about the size of Idaho, so it's hard to comprehend, I guess, the distances you have over there.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's huge, and I've been to Europe a little bit and to the Middle East a little bit, and it hits you the other way too. How, because it all looks big to me. It all looks similar and big and huge, but it's and you don't see the cut up pieces when you're here. So I mean, I know where Montana is because Montana's where home is.
Yeah.
For me, but I don't know what I'm trying to say. It is. It's a big state, and it's really big country, and a lot of it is mountains. Yeah. And so you can't see how big it is until you get on top of a mountain.
Sure.
And then you just see more mountains, and you're like, whoa.
Sure. Okay. Right then. Well, I'm going to end this with the traditional quick quiz, if you're ready for the extremely hard-hitting questions.
Oh, I hate hard-hitting questions. Okay.
What's your all-time favorite song, if you had to pick one?
Oh, that's so tough because I have a favorite song for every type of music.
Yeah, it's really difficult.
Probably Heart of Gold by Neil Young, though. It's one I've liked for a long time.
That is such a brilliant choice. That's one of my favorites too. Love it. What tool, gadget, or piece of equipment could you not manage without on the ranch?
All of them? I guess I want to say saddle, because riding bareback gets uncomfortable a lot quicker than you'd think it would.
Especially for 12 hours.
but I use my multi-tool and my planner a lot. Yeah. And if you have to be a ranch wife, you have to cook for people. So my crock pot too. I need that.
Yeah. Okay. I've got to ask this. I've got to ask it. What's your favorite Western movie?
You know, for years, my favorite was The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. I mean, you couldn't top that.
Yeah.
But I fell in love with the new Magnificent Seven. It is just such a good movie. You laugh, you cry. The cast is wonderful. I'm a Magnificent Seven, the new one. Cool. It's got me.
I haven't seen the new version of that. I'll have to check it out now on your recommendation.
Oh, absolutely, you have to.
Do you find when you watch a Western movie though? Do you find yourself critiquing it? Are you like, that's not right?
Super critical. We're awful. You don't want to watch a movie with us, especially if it's a movie about ranchers. They came out with a TV series called Yellowstone with Kevin Costner, and we only saw the one episode where they're calving and they've got to pull this calf, and it's epic. And they pull the calf out and it runs away. Like, oh yeah, that happens a lot.
Yeah, I'm sure. All right then.
Stunning though. It was a great piece of cinema.
Yeah, I'll bet. All right. What's your idea of a perfect day?
My absolute favorite days here are when we get to ride all day and gather in the mountain and just nothing makes me happier than to be on a horse all day, even though in my old age it's starting to really hurt. It's still, that's my happy place.
Sure. All right then. And lastly, what's your favorite ag social media account?
That's awful. You can't ask people that.
But, I have to. It's really tough. And loads of people say you is the answer for this. So, but what's your favorite?
Oh my goodness. That's so flattering. So now I really can't answer it. I don't. It's kind of like music. I have 7 different sheep accounts that I adore. I love their pictures, and a goat account or 2 or 3 or 5 and several dairy accounts. And so many people that aren't even on or about agriculture that are just wonderful people that I talk to. I think my favorite accounts, though, are what we were talking about with the Farms of the World and Egg of the World and all the other hosted accounts, because it's just there's so much variety. So you don't ever see the same thing twice. And it's just a fun way to see agriculture, at least.
Definitely. I'm surprised.
That's my safe answer.
That is a very diplomatic answer, but I'm surprised you said sheep accounts, because I didn't think cattle ranchers liked sheep very much.
Well, we don't like raising them ourselves. I tried, and I'm not good at it, but they're just, I love wool, and I like to eat lamb. And I grew up with friends that raised sheep. By the Rambouillet sheep. And she did wonderful things with her wool, and I learned to spin and knit and crochet and the other loom with the loom. What is that? Weaving.
Yeah.
I learned to do something that I don't know the name of it. But I think that sheep are just really amazing. They scare me not as much as hogs, but they scare me. They seem very spiteful animals, but I like watching them and I love pictures of them.
Okay, Cheyenne, it's been brilliant to speak to you. Thank you for taking time out of your busy day. I've told you this before, but following you on Twitter is one of the single best things about it. And my girls, in particular, love seeing your pictures.
Oh, thank you. Well, I love seeing your family too. It's the highlight of being able to connect like this to me is to see other people so similar and so different. And it's really wonderful. I really appreciate the compliment. Hope you guys can come visit us someday.
We talk about it. We will try to one day. And we'll let the girls get a bit bigger. But don't make me sit in a saddle for 12 hours a day.
No. We'll start with 6 or 5. 6.
Simple. All right, Sam. Brilliant to speak to you. And hopefully speak to you again soon.
Thank you so much.
And to everyone at home, thanks for listening. And I hope to see you next time. I've been Will Evans. This has been Rock and Roll Farming. Thank you and good night.